Hello and welcome to the Rookie Patcher Podcast. My name's Eric Mappin, and I am your host, and I am bringing to you today episode 15. And now, every summer for the last 3 years, we have done a study in something called Just War Theory. And that seems a very odd Bible study kind of type topic to have for a church to offer, but we actually offer it. We've been conducting it with naval flight students and flight instructors. So I've invited today the lead teacher of that study and a member of our church to help explain what in the world Just War Theory is and why it's so important. So if you have never heard of this, or you've heard of it but you don't really know much about it, this is the episode for you. This conversation was specifically designed to introduce someone who's never heard this of Just War Theory before, to introduce you to the basic concepts of it. So without further ado, let's go ahead and jump into the conversation. Matt Peden, welcome to the podcast.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
All right, Matt, I know who you are. We have known who you are for some years now, but go ahead and introduce yourself to everybody else that doesn't know you.
Sure. Well, my name is Matt Peden. Grew up in central Illinois. My stepfather was in the Navy. He told me some Navy stories as a child. Of course, then I joined the Navy. I grew up going to church as well, primarily because of him. So now I'm an instructor pilot with the Navy and leading Officer Christian Fellowship Bible studies. That brings me to meeting you and brings me to here today.
All right. Yeah. So we have a naval air station just outside of our city of Meridian, and one of the biggest employers in the area, and so it's a large, significant amount of Navy and Marine pilots go through Meridian.
Very true. That's very true. There's two main training stations for Navy jet pilots, and this is one of them. So yes, quite a few.
Yeah. So one of the things that I was sitting back and I was thinking about, okay, how do we reach these Navy guys? And so then I was thinking on that. So I went and I called you up and said, hey, you know, can you be thinking about what something we could do that would provide some care, some type of ministry to these student pilots or to these Navy folks? And you called me back and you were like, okay, I got something, but it's going to sound kind of weird. And so you said, Just War Theory.
Granted,
it did sound weird because I had never studied Just War Theory. I had heard of Just War Theory. So there's a lot of people that have either not heard of it or when they hear it, their eyes already begin to glaze over and they're already ready to run away screaming because it sounds heady philosophy, just give me some Netflix and I want to get on something more interesting. So what is Just War Theory?
Well, first of all, it can be a dry topic depending on who's doing the talking or the writing and what kinds of things you're looking at. The gist of Just War Theory, though, is the idea of when is it right to go to war? And when you do go to war, how should you conduct that war? Are there no rules in love and war? All is fair? I don't think we believe that as a society. One of the main reasons we'll decry a side as the side that should lose a war are by the atrocities they commit in war. So I think that statement of all is fair in love and war is not true. And that leads us to then ask, what is fair? And I think deep down we all know that It can't just be you versus somebody else or a nation versus another nation that simple, that there is a right and there is a wrong when it comes to those things. So in short, the just war theory is the study of when is it right to go to war and what is right to do in war once you have gone to war.
Yeah, and one of the things that I wanted to make sure that we understood was is that out of that conversation that you and I had, I forgot to mention this, is that we ended up starting a just war theory study for flight instructors and flight students. And then last year was actually, thanks to the wonderful chaplain that you guys got over there, Matt Permont?
Permort.
Okay, Matt Permort. So he was kind enough to let us use the chapel, and also he invited other non-officers, non-flight students to come, and so we had some Marines in there and some 18, 19 year old Marines in there, and so that was awesome, and just to see how it's grown and developed. So just war is not necessarily. It's not actually a theory, is it?
That is very true. It is a topic of discussion. There is no, hey, here's the theory. Like there would be a theory of evolution. It's an ongoing discussion almost with people who fall on different ends of the spectrum sometimes. It's also been described as a tradition, the just war tradition. Because it's been around for thousands of years, and there's many, many people who've contributed to the ideas. Some have added things. Some have thought that, hey, maybe we didn't get it right before. Let's change this a little bit, or we know more about this, or we're seeing new technology. Things are possible that we never thought were possible before. It's an ongoing to be termed as a theory is probably a little bit of a misnomer. You can't study the theory and know everything about it. It is a very far-reaching topic of discussion that is very important as a moral discussion to any society.
Yeah, I like the word tradition because one of the great things about just war theory as you study it is that you realize you're entering into this great conversation that has been going on for, I mean, thousands of years.
Yeah.
I mean, going back to, going back to Aristotle?
Yes.
That's the earliest roots of it, right?
Yeah, most people would say Aristotle was probably the first person. He was the first person to put the word just and war together. Most people would point to him.
And I think it's interesting because it highlights the fact that even if you're talking about going back to Aristotle, that even there, the very idea that we would want to be that we would be concerned about making just war, it assumes that man has a conscience because we're concerned for justice. And this speaks to, from a Christian perspective, it speaks to the way in which we are made in the image of God. And that we have this, even unbelievers like Aristotle, and others who have contributed to the just war tradition, even today that are agnostic, atheists, or either humanist, secular, whatever, that there is this sense of not just moral relativity. Like you can't get moral relativity. It's about just war. And so even if you are arguing against the accepted, understanding of the just war tradition, you're still arguing with a sense of you want something more just than the just war tradition. You know, so it's, any way you slice it, you can't get away from this idea that there's this longing for justice that it speaks to, I think, the divine aspect of man.
Absolutely. I completely agree. I think relativism and just war theory are completely incompatible. And there's many things that relativism doesn't give a good answer to. And certainly justice would be one of them, especially if we're in the case of war. Justice is going to result in the death of some. So should, you know, what if your truth isn't their truth? Do you still, you know, execute this war? It doesn't answer the questions very, it really ultimately does not answer the questions. And that idea of justice, brings us to, what is the standard to which we, you know, compare it to? And if there is a standard, then there must be a standard giver. Or it's just our standard. And if it's our standard, it just will break down when it comes to multiple cultures dealing with each other.
Yeah. And so let's get into, the basic parts. Now, there's a caveat here, because as soon as you start breaking down just war theory into the roughly about four major sections that it's typically described in, there's always, especially if you're talking about with anybody knowledgeable about it, they'll always kind of go like, excuse me, you know, and they'll make the point about dealing with these things in isolation. And so, so we'll talk about that, about kind of how the misuse of this, but if you could just kind of break down into the major parts of just war theory for us so that we can just try to create some categories to understand what just war theory is.
Sure. So the most basic, two parts would be just what's called just cause and then just conduct. When is it okay? Just cause would be, when am I justified to go to war with another nation? What is cause for going to war? When would that be okay? And then just conduct would be, okay, now that we have decided that it is okay to go to war, what is okay for us to do in war? And there's, you know, as you already kind of alluded to, many sort of misuses of the theory. And one of the misuses would be to only use one of those two. And typically we find people who will use just cause, but then completely say anything is on the table once we decide to go to war. All means necessary to win this war. So those would be the two most basic elements of just war theory. And within each of those, you've got kind of some sub levels there.
So what are some of the sub levels? If you don't mind going off on a couple of those.
Yeah, sure. Real quick. Sorry, it's been a little bit since I looked over some of this stuff, but, let me back this up real quick. All right. This should be a good one. Okay, so for just cause, how I would break that down is that the most basic level is you must have a proper authority. You might hear some people at work sometimes say, hey, I'm going to war with whoever. And usually what they mean is they wronged me, so I'm going to wrong them. Or I'm going to hold a grudge because they did this to me, stabbed me in the back. That's not really war, right? That's not really what we're talking about. Gang wars, not a war, a true war. A proper authority would be very important to decide who is it who gets to decide, that war can be declared. Is it any, you know, any old citizen? Is it only the United Nations? Is it, a nation state? Is it a state? Within that, then you'd also have, you can kind of more, once you decide on proper authority.
Can I pause you there on there?
So, yeah, go ahead.
So for our current discussions, because there's lots of debates about the power of the president. And this is not even just Donald Trump right now, but also when Obama, and I mean going back to any president really, but especially you think about who has the right to engage in war, and we know technically only Congress can engage in war. Yet we also have seen that the executive branch can almost unilaterally do a whole lot of military engagement that looks a lot like war, and people will object and say, hey, this is not right because you don't have a proper authority, which is Congress, authorizing this specific action. But then there's also people who come back and say, okay, yeah, but then how do we also effectively, since that's a slow process, there's times where we have to respond quickly. Mm-hmm. How do we respond? Because not everyone, usually it's libertarians who are saying like, get us out of these wars and these are all unjust wars. But even just like guy like Justin Amash, the libertarian guy, he's saying, look, I'm not saying we shouldn't be able to do anything unless Congress approves of it. He said, but we need to at least develop a process to determine that. So this doesn't matter today.
Yes, absolutely. And that would be an example that would be specific to our nation with a Congress and an executive branch. Other nations where it's maybe just a monarch, that we could, I guess, tailor that conversation to how our government works and how we've decided to determine which branch of our government can make that decision. When you kind of, I guess, broaden out the conversation to multiple nations, that would be maybe not as detailed, but it is, as you can see right there, as you gave that example, it's very important for us as the citizens to know, and anybody working in government, who can do this, and who can't do it. Mm-hmm. And when the people who can't do it are making that decision, how do we bring that back into to where it should be? So it's very important to know.
So just cause, so you need a proper authority to determine whether or not we can go to war. Then what else?
So a couple of the other avenues you can go down is defensive wars and offensive wars, and those are very different kinds of determinations. A defensive war, for a lot of people who know nothing about just war theory, it's a very easy, it's typically the easier path to deciding to go to war. Not very many people were opposed to us going to war with Japan after Pearl Harbor.
Right.
Not very many people were opposed to us trying to go get Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden after the attacks of September 11th, 2001. Defensive wars are very easy to decide on. I don't want to say very easy, but much, much more clear cut to decide on. And we almost have a gut natural reaction to those. But you also have times of offensive wars. And in there, you can see examples in history and you can come up with theoretical examples where it is very easy to say, I guess that is a case where we should go to war. Now, I think that determination and that decision doesn't quite come as naturally to the gut feeling, especially offensive war. It sounds like, hey, if you're going to start this war, that sounds like it's optional. We could not start a war, and wouldn't that be better? But if you start lining out the scenarios, there are times where it is right to go to war offensively. Now, beyond that, once you kind of are going through the thought process, maybe you decide, yeah, we do have a good cause for going to war. There's still other things to consider within just cause, and that would be that we have the right intent here. Typically, I think from a Christian perspective, we're not doing this because we hate them. And then that it is the last resort. This one is easy to boil down to your relationships with other people, perhaps your children. If you don't know that they did something wrong, you probably shouldn't issue a punishment. You probably should start by saying, hey, I just want you to know you did something wrong. Do we recognize that? Are we on the same playing field? Is there a misunderstanding? A good term to go along with that would be struggling to remember at the moment, but using the police kind of talk all the time. I'll come up with it later, but it's basically the the acceleration of hostilities. You wouldn't want to do that unnecessarily. So the whole idea of last resort is we've tried the other things. It's not literally this is the last possible thing we could do, but it is reasonably the last thing that we can do. And then lastly, that we have a reasonable chance of success. Now that one, depending on different, again, historical examples you can look at, there are times where people will say, hey, no matter what, this is what we must do. But in most cases, it's reasonable, and Jesus gives an example even, that you should go to war if you can win it, or if you reasonably could win it. If there's no possible chance from your position as a leader of winning a war, then to go to war is simply to cause a lot of your countrymen to die in that process, and knowing that it's not going to work out in the end.
Now, so that now, yeah, go now ahead. One thing is I want to highlight is that that the idea of reasonable chance of success in combat was not Gimli the Dwarf's thinking in the last Lord of the Rings movie, because he said, you know, minimal chance of success, you know, probability of death. Well, then what are we waiting for? So I'm just telling you that Gimli the Dwarf does not share the reasonable success requirement to go to war with the, but I guess if you got Mordor stomping at your gates, or if you're going to go stomp at their gates, that maybe it's a little different. So.
Yeah. That would come down to what is better, to surrender to these guys perhaps guarantees death, but to fight gives us, at least an honorable way of going out.
Yeah.
Good example.
Yeah. We do just war theory on Lord of the Rings. That's great. So let's move over to, just conduct. I think that's probably, I feel like the just cause one is, it feels more cerebral because you're talking about things like intent, talking about preemptive strikes or defensive, and there's a lot of, whereas I think just conduct is probably the one that gets more attention because of examples from military contractors or military personnel who have been prosecuted for things that they've done overseas. I think those kinds of stories will grab headlines, and it'll talk about issues of like just conduct, and you'll see that especially in the news. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the subcategories for just conduct?
Sure. So the two biggest buzzwords with just conduct would be discrimination and proportionality. Discrimination being who is a combatant and can be targeted in war, and who or what is a non-combatant.
And now, go ahead. Discrimination in this case is a good thing.
Yes. Typically, discrimination, of course, has a bad connotation, simply because it's used to determine, an unjust, discrimination. People who are, you know, basically hating somebody for, a completely awful reason. But yes, in this case, we want to be able to separate out. And just, I guess, if we think back to the basic definition of the word discriminate or discrimination, how are we going to decide who fits into what category here? Who's a combatant? Who's a, who can be targeted or what? And then who or what is not a combatant who must not be targeted and by some people's accounts even protected in wars? So does that answer your question?
Yeah, yeah. And so this issue gets dicey because when we do the class, I like how you will put up different pictures or different scenarios, and you're like, okay, well, are medics, you know, combatants, you know, can they, or what about, a weapons factory, you know, a weapons factory that is manned by civilians? Or, or maybe a converted auto plant that is producing materials that are taken somewhere else to be put together for planes and things during the war effort. And it's all civilians all the way. You know, are they combatants? There's no rifles. There's no personal weaponry there, but they are producing what is part of the machinery of war. So, you know, so there's just a lot of interesting, you know, like, can you blow up a bridge? You know, like, you know, this, And so I think the discrimination issue it seems clear cut at first because you're like, guys with guns, people, women and children in villages, obvious. And then you're like, it's not so obvious when you get that. And when you're in command and you have to make these decisions, it's really not, you know, that's tough.
All right. Well, that is going to do it for us today. I hope you enjoyed this conversation. It was informative to you. Be sure to join us back for the next episode as we conclude our conversation about just war theory. So for the Rookie Pastor Podcast, I'm Eric Mabbitt. And remember, just one step at a time.